I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we're on episode number 44.
Wow.
Another Pixar movie,
mm-hmm.
Inside Out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maggie, you want to cry?
God, I've cried so much over the last couple of days that I really don't. I wasn't excited to rewatch this because, like, I'd cried enough over the last, like, 36 hours. Yeah, I wasn't too thrilled on rewatching this one because I knew I'd fucking bawl. But shockingly, I did not cry as hard as I thought I was going to. No, I definitely cried harder at Interstellar, so. But maybe that is what broke me.
You did cry a lot more for Interstellar.
There were no tears left.
The umpteenth time you've seen it now?
Fourth.
All right, fourth, whatever.
We went and saw Interstellar on the IMAX screen, and because we bought our tickets way too late, we were the middle of the second row. So.
Yeah, second row back in an IMAX theater.
Yeah, all we saw was screen.
Yeah.
And
which there were some moments where just like, this is so cool. It's just the entire,
yeah,
no, my whole field of vision is all movie.
There were moments where I had to like go to the bathroom, and while I was in the bathroom, I had to be like, I'm on Earth. I'm okay. I'm not there. It's not real. Because it fucking took over my senses. Like, I could feel the tremble of that movie in my chest. It was incredible. It was incredible. And seeing it for the first time on the big screen.
Yeah, your first time in the theater.
Yes.
And getting to see it on IMAX.
Whew, it was fucking amazing. And I bawled my goddamn face off. So for Inside Out, it was more like, I cried, but it wasn't as bad. Thankfully.
I mean, it's always the ending that gets you.
It's always the fucking ending. Of course, we all know the story of Inside Out. It portrays the emotions inside a, you know, a tween's head, a tween girl's head, as she, you know, faces the challenges of moving across country. And it's a fucking tearjerker. It's not a kid's movie. I mean, like, it's maybe a teen and up movie.
Yeah, but
like, this isn't a movie for, like, your five-year-old.
No, our kids were not ever interested in this one.
We took them to see it in the theater, though.
Yeah, but they weren't.
Yeah, they didn't get
it. When we got it on Blu-ray, they weren't excited to rewatch it with us.
Do we have it on Blu-ray?
We do.
Oh, of course we do. It's us.
We did eventually stop buying every Pixar movie that came out, but Inside Out was still part of the
collection.
Well, yeah, it was part of the IMAX-a-sance.
Yes.
eventually they kind of...
IMAX-a-sance?
I'm sorry, the Pixar-a-sance.
I was about to say, like, I read on IMDb, that this movie, they had thought about putting this movie in IMAX and then decided against it.
No, but this was one of those movies during Pixar's,
like, Rain.
Golden age of Pixar.
Absolutely is. And it's just so fucking good. You know, it's all these movies are on this list for a reason, but this one in particular. Now, we haven't seen Inside Out 2 yet. I hear it's incredibly emotional. I almost considered watching it yesterday. Super glad I didn't.
Inside Out was directed by Pete Docter.
Of course it was.
Of course it was. And that's probably, you know, he's responsible for the golden age of Pixar. Him and...
Blaster?
No, Ulrich.
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of his first name right now.
You got his last name. Larry?
Sure, we'll say Larry, but it's not. I have to look in my vast notes, but they're too vast. Pete Docter directed Up, which is why we've talked about him before when we did Up. He also directed Monsters, Inc., which we have that episode coming out this February.
Yeah, I'm excited to rewatch it.
It's been a while since I've seen Monsters, Inc., but it's also up there with a lot of these great Pixar films that came out during this time, mid-teens, early teens.
Yeah, their long line of bangers.
And he also directed Soul. He wrote Inside Out, and he, of course, we've talked about this before, he wrote the original story to Toy Story and Monsters, Inc., WALL-E, Up, and soul.
Mm-hmm.
Another writer of Inside Out was Ronnie Del Carmen, who wrote the comic book story Holiday Nights in the 90s, which was the basis for season one, episode one of the continuation of the Batman animated series, when they renamed it The New Batman Adventures. So its first episode was subject matter was taken from a comic book written by the same guy who also wrote Inside Out.
Fascinating. So that's why you were looking up stuff on Batman.
I'm always trying to make some excuse to look up stuff about Batman.
But Batman is the best.
He was also one of the writers for the Pixar short Doug's Special Mission. And then you got Meg LaFauve.
Shut up, Meg.
She was one of the 8 writers for Captain Marvel.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. She also wrote The Good Dinosaur, and she's the only writer from Inside. She's the only creative, as far as writers and directors go, from the original Inside Out, who went on to do Inside Out 2.
Interesting. Pete Docter had nothing to do with Inside
Out 2? Pete Docter had nothing to do with Inside Out 2.
Huh.
But she did, and she worked on The Good Dinosaur with a couple other people. Kelsey Mann was one of them. So her and Kelsey Mann are responsible for the writing of Inside Out 2.
Oh, okay.
Kelsey Mann also directed Inside Out 2.
All right.
So
The Good Dinosaur is not the best Pixar movie on this planet.
It's not the best, but it's certainly not terrible.
I don't remember much about it.
I remember
it
being
cute.
Very cute and then, a little sad at the end, like most Pixar movies.
Yeah.
And then, like always, we are always bowing at the feet of His Majesty.
Oh, my God. Our King, our Lord and Savior.
Always coming up with the best original music.
Fucking genius man that is.
Michael Giacchino.
Motherfucking the GOAT. God, we love him. We should try to get him on this podcast. I imagine he probably has some sort of like appearance fee that we cannot pay. But we would just be like, hey, man, we're just going to like fucking lavish love on you for an hour. You want to come be a part of that?
We would have to come up with some hot ones level questions.
Yeah, we really would. Instead of us just like sitting there just staring at him being like, hi, we love you. You're amazing. Tell us how you make the music, please.
Yeah, I think we'd scare him off.
Michael Giacchino, we love you so, so, so fucking much. We love you so fucking much, and we have for so long. Please just know that. God, do we love you.
Inside Out is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
Of course.
It has a 98% from critics.
That's about right.
And only an 89% from audiences.
Yeah, I can see it. Again, it's kind of going back to, we've had this argument before, that sometimes these animated films, audiences don't expect them to hit as hard as they do. And they don't expect them to be, they expect them to be like a lighthearted kids movie. And instead, it's a beautifully heartbreaking essay on the complexity of emotions, the loss of childhood innocence, and the terrifying nature of one's own mind. I can imagine a mom with a couple of toddlers walking out of the movie theater like, motherfucker, that was not what I expected. Give it a C. It was pretty. So, I get it. I imagine that a lot of people, are affected by this movie in the same way that I am. People that are in touch with their emotions, people that have been on their own mental health journey, people that were once a teenage girl.
Or are raising
teenagers.
Boys or girls.
Yeah. This movie's going to hit everybody in a different way. They really do keep it quite light and funny for the most part. There's a lot of slapstick moments. There's a lot of cutesy moments. But then there are moments where Joy is looking at a memory of Riley, remembering how she used to stick her tongue out when she colored. And those little things that you kind of forget that your toddler did, and it
the goofball stage.
The goofball stage.
Where they're just...
Oh, just big old fucking goofs.
Not embarrassed about being goofballs.
I know. We've raised a couple of
goofballs. There are a couple of goofballs, for sure.
But still not as much as they once were.
But the older you get, the less of a goofball you are, and you lose that. That's part of your childhood innocence.
Not me. I still contend that I'm pretty goofy. I'm a big old goofball, but that has not helped me in my adult life by any stretch of the imagination.
They want you to mature up for some reason.
Yeah, really, it's so dumb.
So stupid.
Lame.
The movie was made for $175 million,
Yeah.
Which is lower than some of the ones we've been talking about when it comes to animation. They've been more towards, especially with Pixar, in the 200 plus million dollar range.
This movie is a lot, but it's... No, this movie is a lot. Like, I mean, all of those different memory orbs. It's not like it's a simple setting.
That's absolutely not simple. Very beautiful. Not a lot of time spent in the real world.
Mm-mm.
Riley's head world is very creative. That's one thing that I love about Pixar is they are so creative, imaginative. And to show you a visual representation of what's going on inside of a teenager's head.
Yeah.
It's really neat. And the fact that all her core memories and interests get wiped out and she just becomes this closed off, silent,
depressed shell.
Child. Yeah. Shell of a child because she has no interest. She has nothing that's giving her joy.
Yeah.
And also no sadness at the same time. You're just kind of empty and...
That is one of the worst feelings in the world, is that level of sadness where, like, you don't even feel sad. You just feel nothing. And it's not common for me, thankfully. My depression is usually never that cruel to me. But when it hits, it's terrifying. Well, and it's awful.
It's her three remaining emotions were hate,
yeah,
disgust, and fear. And those
anger. I know that anger leads to hate, but, you know, still, hate and anger are not the same thing.
Okay.
Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
So anger,
yeah,
fear, and disgust, which are also very much, you know, fear, anxiety,
mm-hmm,
all those kind of things. And I really like that she lost her joy,
yeah,
to show that part of her. It sucks that it happened to her, but to show it and her having to lose sadness and joy altogether and just be left with those other three emotions, you know, there's a reason she thought running away was a better idea than just trying to make it, mm-hmm, work in San Francisco. So it was made for $175 million, but it made back $356 million domestic, $494 million internationally, and then later another $122 million on home media for a total of $972 million. Not quite a billion-dollar movie from Pixar like a lot of their others can be. But, I mean...
It didn't help that it came out around the same time as Jurassic World. I think it came out the same weekend as Jurassic World. And that literally ate up the box office. I mean, you know, then there were people like me who saw both of them within a week of opening. It's not a bad run of the amount of money it made, like...
Oh, no. It made a shit ton of money. Just because it's just under a billion.
Yeah, it doesn't make it a failure.
The movie was obviously successful and, you know... Probably one of the things they looked at when they released Inside Out 2, mm-hmm, which has had its own success.
Yeah.
Not quite as much as now Moana 2 seems to be,
which is killing it,
wiping the board along with Wicked. Inside Out won 99 awards, but a bitch ain't won.
Good job there.
That included one Oscar for Best Animated Feature. And it was up against some interesting contenders, mm-hmm, other nominees that year. Anomalisa.
Okay.
It's a movie written and directed by Charlie Kaufman.
Oh, so it's pretentious as fuck. It's
animated, which I've never seen an animated Charlie Kaufman movie.
And I won't. So have fun with that.
Yeah. The Boy and the World. It's about a little boy who goes on an adventure quest in search for his father.
Okay.
Shaun the Sheep.
Oh, yeah.
Which is from the creators of Wallace and Gromit, mm-hmm, and Chicken Run. And then Marnie Was There. And it's an anime from Japan.
Huh.
Not a lot of other... A lot of times there's a lot of American animated films that are contending with Pixar. It's nice to see that at least... other people, other styles, like, mm-hmm, each one of these movies has its own very inexpensive, all the way from very inexpensive anime, 2D animation, some of them stop motion animation from the creators of Sean
Aardman.
Aardman, thank you.
Yeah.
Aardman.
How did Michael Giacchino not win for best score? What won for best score? Because
it's a good question.
It's got to be something that's out of the fucking park.
And the fact that he wasn't even nominated.
I'm sorry. Once more.
And again, the feeling.
me.
Thank you. Original score went to Hateful Eight, was the winner.
Okay. And what else was nominated?
Bridge of Spies, which was that Tom Hanks movie.
Yeah.
Carol.
Uh-huh.
Which I
lesbian, Cate Blanchett movie.
Sicario.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great movie, but I don't remember the music. And Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Which won because it was the best of the three John Williams soundtracks.
It's
of the
Force Awakens is very other Star Wars movies.
They all
I would barely
other
call
other
it original.
Stories. Yeah, but have you listened to the soundtrack? It slaps. You get race theme.
Yes, I've listened. I own the soundtrack on vinyl.
I know you do, but you get race theme, you get pose theme, which we
rarely
hear.
And those new themes are great.
Yeah.
But I think they're talking about the beginning to end score.
And it's a good score.
And it's a good score.
But how is Michael Giacchino not on that fucking list?
I don't know. Like I said, I don't remember the music at all from Bridge of Spies. Ugh. I did watch that movie. Sicario I watched. Don't remember the music. Carol I didn't see, so of course
not. How's the music in Hateful Eight?
Hateful Eight, I do remember the music, but it was very... I remember it being kind of repetitive. The fact that he's not on here with his scores.
I shall say one last time. Sorry, Michael. You're in our heart. You win every Oscar. Even, Best Supporting Actress. It always goes to you.
Inside Out was also nominated for Best Original Screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
It did not win.
No.
It went to Spotlight. It was that movie about the Catholic Church scandal with Mark
Jesus
Ruffalo and Michael
Christ.
Keaton. Spotlight also won Best Film of the Year that year.
Mm, yeah, I mean, who doesn't love a fun movie about Catholic Church problems?
Bridge of Spies was also nominated for Original Screenplay. Mm-hmm. Ex Machina, which is cool.
Sweet baby.
And then Straight Outta Compton.
Well, okay.
Love how an animated, really cute animated film can wiggle its way into something like Straight Outta Compton, Ex Machina, Bridge of Spies, Spotlight.
It's not just a cute little movie.
But it's the subject matter of those specific live-action movies. And then you have a Pixar film. I know it's not a cute little movie, but it's still a Pixar film versus these super serious, dramatic bummers. All right, you ready to get into the cast?
Yeah, let's do it.
So we have Amy Poehler,
who, is absolutely the personification of joy in every possible way. I love her so much.
Especially in Parks and Rec.
Oh, yeah. I mean, her character, she's just such an amazingly fun actress. Whenever she pops up on voice notes on the Lonely Island and Seth Meyers podcast, I'm always so happy. I love her. I have not always loved her. There was a time in the beginning when she was first, when she was still just sort of a character actress, that she would pop up in things and I would be a little annoyed by her, especially in, Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
God, I don't remember her at all in that.
She had Tourette's in that one. But there are times where she would pop up in, those gross-out boy comedies around that era, and I was always just like, meh. But I warmed up to her when she was on SNL, and then especially watching her and Tina Fey do Weekend Update. And, my love for Amy Poehler is, unending. I adore her. Also, check out her her book. Specifically, I have the audio book of her autobiography. It's really sweet.
And what's the name of the TV show that her and Ron Swanson do?
Not
Ron Swanson, but...
Making It. Yeah. Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman were the hosts of a really cute little series on NBC that was called Making It. I think it was only three seasons, tops.
But it was so good.
It was so cute. And it was it was like the Great British Bake Off, but for craft, crafting. And it was really gentle and it was never cutthroat the way that American reality shows are, competition shows. It made me cry several times. Amy and Nick would always have like a pun off a couple times during the season. Like it was a really, really cute little show. That was
so
heartfelt at its best.
Pure.
Yeah. It was a pure one.
We got Bill Hader.
Who I love Bill so Hader's much.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, he plays Fear. And, you know, again, just this wonderful comedian, wonderful actor. I haven't seen a lot of his more serious stuff. Like, I haven't watched Barry.
I've watched the first, like, few episodes of Barry. And
but I've heard such good things about
The only thing I hear, I mean, IMDb has it at an 8.3, which is fantastic for a TV show.
Yeah, it is.
Especially a modern TV show.
Yeah, everybody loved that show. But for me, he'll always be Stefan.
Then we got Lewis Black.
Fucking perfect in this role. Who else could they have picked to play anger but the angriest man to ever exist?
I fucking love Lewis Black so
the way
much.
He jabs his finger towards the audience when he's talking.
Yeah.
And you can just like feel the weight of his angry little finger.
Angry finger that's just pointing at you and being so angry about everything.
I mean,
he cracks
he's
my
perfection.
Shit up so much.
He's perfection. He's great in this.
He's great in this. He's got some amazing, I think, HBO specials.
Yeah, some comedy specials out there.
That are just pure gold. But he also is in a movie called Accepted.
Accepted's such a fun and stupid, with like
Justin Long, Jonah Hill, Blake Lively. It's
so dumb.
It's but so we, dumb,
it, it,
but
it holds
it's,
a special place in our heart for some reason.
It's a hilarious, dumb comedy, and Lewis Black is in it, and I love his character. Then we got Mindy Kaling, as most people know her from The Office.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was that sitcom of hers?
The Mindy Project.
The Mindy Project. That was it.
Yeah.
That was a cute
that
show
cute.
Up to a point. I think that when it comes to Mindy,
I definitely didn't watch every episode of that, but I would watch it while you were watching it
and
be like, oh, this is cute.
The thing about Mindy Kaling was,
it's got a 7.5 on IMDb, which is also not bad.
And the first two seasons were really good, and then she got together with the main guy after a long time of the Will and Worthy, and then the show kind of tanked, and there was lots of, like, you know, they broke up, they got back together,
there was a kid involved.
It was all sorts of, like, I don't know, it was really after a while, it was the rest of the cast of that show that I enjoyed watching, and then I finally gave up on it. I didn't even bother with the last season.
I found that the Will They, Won't They is like the whole reason people tune in, and once they do, they have no reason to watch anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and so you either
you gotta
keep
end
the
it.
Characters happy and together and then just focus on other stories, or you constantly are like wedging,
splitting them up
and bringing them back together and causing problems, and that's so unnecessary. The way that they did it on Brooklyn Nine-Nine was the best. Once Amy and Jake got together, there was rarely ever episodes about their relationship. There were never moments.
But they also didn't spend like 8 seasons of them not together.
No, they didn't. When they got to, what, in the fourth season?
It was pretty early.
Yeah. But like, there was never moments where they're like, oh, we're going to split these two up for fun. I mean, there were parts where they were away from each other for long stretches, but their relationship stayed solid throughout. There was never like, oh, he looked at a girl and now I'm jealous, or bullshit like that, that lesser shows wedge into their Will They, Won't They characters, Mindy Project. I've gotten to the point where I'm kind of over her. She was out there too much. She was saying too many things on Twitter. She always has an opinion. That Velma show looked stupid as fuck. I don't mind Mindy Kaling in small doses.
Yeah.
But anymore, I'm just very much, I'm like, meh, when it comes to her. I'm not excited to see her connected to a project. Let's just put it that way. I'm like, oh, and she's there too. Okay.
We got Phyllis Smith, who plays Sadness, who people also know from
The Office.
The Office.
Yeah. She was a casting director for a really long time.
She's amazing in The Office.
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch
Phyllis
her.
Phyllis is one of the best characters.
I don't watch a lot of her stuff, whatever she did after The Office.
Yeah. She hasn't done much. I think she kind of like,
I know she's been in things, and occasionally she pops up or I hear her voice. She's got a very specific voice.
That droll sort of like, oh, woe is me.
But if The Office, I mean, The Office is, I love The Office.
Hopefully she just like made her money and now she's just enjoying her life. But she is spectacular in this role.
Yeah. Sadness is a great,
Her
voice is great for Sadness. Richard Kine.
Oh,
plays Bing Bong. Love Richard Kind.
Love Richard Kind. Again, never unhappy to see Richard Kind in anything. Whether it's his face, it's his voice, he appears, and like I instantly know that it's going to be funnier, no matter what we're
watching. His character in Big Mouth.
Oh my God. Like, it's just him in general. But yeah, no, he plays the dad in Big Mouth. He plays Andrew's dad, and he's obsessed with scallops, even though they give him the runs, and I love him. Richard Kind is one of those great, like, comedians, you know? He's been in everything forever. He's a national treasure, and I love the man.
I first knew Richard Kind from Spin City with Michael J. Fox.
Spin City was a great show.
Spin City was a great show. That was another show that if I saw it streaming on something, which it could be, I just haven't actively looked for it.
That was a Chuck Lorre thing, wasn't it? Sorry, I didn't mean to make you have to look that up. I find that most Chuck Lorre sitcoms have not aged well, including the more recent ones.
But I'm sure there's, I mean, it's from 1996 to 2002.
Yeah, no.
I'm sure there's plenty of things that haven't aged well because
including Charlie 1996 Sheen. To 1992. Charlie Sheen took over for Michael J. Fox there for a while.
He did, yes. Yeah,
but I remember finding that show. Barry Boswick played the mayor in that show. And again, Barry Boswick, national treasure.
I don't see Chuck Lorre. I think the main producer is Bill Lawrence.
Bill Lawrence! Oh my God! No, you're right! You're right!
That was
pre-Scrubs Bill Lawrence.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so sorry
about
that.
It's probably not as bad as... I mean, it probably hasn't aged well because it's still early 90s, yeah. Or late 90s to early 2000s.
Yeah.
But...
And Charlie Sheen's in it.
Coming from the guy who later does Ted Lasso
and Scrubs, which is, you know, one of my top three favorite sitcoms of all time.
I'm not expecting it to be like so, top two. Like, oh, I can't believe he said that word that I knew when I was a teenager, and now I'm in my 40s and older and wiser, and I would never think of going back in time and judging it based off of the time it came out.
As you were rambling on about that, I don't know if you heard me wondering about what my top three favorite sitcoms are of all time.
All time?
Yes, but they definitely are Frasier, Parks and Rec, and Scrubs. Or maybe even Frasier, Scrubs, Parks and Rec. With 30 Rock being there. It's definitely Frasier and then Scrubs in terms of favorite sitcoms of all time, because Frasier is perfect from beginning to end, and Scrubs is almost perfect from beginning to end. So, including the end that nobody likes, but I actually don't mind. I don't like that weird little half season of not Scrubs. Anyways.
Diane Lane plays the mom.
Forever babe,
and
Diane
Kyle
Lane.
MacLachlan plays the dad.
Pixar?
Which I didn't know.
I knew that the dad was played by either Kyle MacLachlan or the Dermot McDillon, you know, centrifuge there.
Dermot Maroney.
Yes. Diane Lane is, I mean, honest to God, forever one of the most beautiful women to ever live. Like, just mega gaga babe from the beginning till the end. Obsessed, in love, kind of want to watch Under the Tuscan Sun just because it's been a hot minute. Talk about a sappy rom-com night. I watched Sense and Sensibility last night and cried my face off. I need a couple more good sappy rom-coms in my life. Pixar dads are so fucking hot. What is it about Pixar dads? Like, this dad is slightly disheveled. He's got a 5 o'clock shadow. He's got that big bushy mustache. And I would hit him like a train. Like a train, caveman. He is so hot. The dad from, what was that Italian fish one? Luigi or whatever it was. Yeah, we all know what I'm talking about.
Luigi.
Super hot, right? Like, Pixar dads are mega babes. And I appreciate that deeply. And the moms all kind of have the same body shape, but, you know, MILFs nonetheless.
So I was looking at Inside Out 2 real briefly because we've pretty much gotten through our, like, main chunk of the cast.
Yeah.
And we can cover some other ones in a bit, but I just wanted to know if there were any major differences between...
I know Bill Hader's not in it.
Bill Hader's not in it, and neither is Mindy Kaling.
Oh, yeah.
Liza Lapira is now discussed.
Okay.
She is known for being in Fast and Furious, which is like number 3 or 10. I can't remember.
It's one of them.
And then Tony Hale from...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Buster Bluth.
Buster Bluth from...
I'm a monster!
Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Is now Fear. Lewis Black came back. Phyllis Smith came back. And Amy Poehler. That... Maya Hawke is now Anxiety.
Yeah.
Which I do like Maya Hawke. And Kensington Tallman.
Ooh.
Who I believe was not the original Riley. No, it was not. They did age her up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why I haven't wanted to see Inside Out 2, there were two specific reasons. One is that I saw a bunch of tweets and threads and whatnot about how, like, you know, nobody wanted to ugly cry that hard in public. And I was like, oh, fuck, if other people are crying that hard in public, I'm going to be a goddamn wreck. I mean, that's something that you want to stay home and do, right? When you've got plentiful tissues and somebody turning and staring at you from... their seat in front of you because you're sobbing so hard you can't speak, which has happened to me in theaters. I've had people stare and gawk at how hard I've cried. So that's definitely an at-home cry. And secondly, as a person with deeply rooted anxiety, in fact, I'm pretty sure anxiety is what rules the council of my brain. I don't think I could handle the panic attack scene because apparently it's very real. And I just... You know, I had a panic attack not too long ago. It wasn't great. Acknowledging that anxiety runs my head, I just couldn't do it. So, like, I will watch it eventually. I just know I'm going to have to be in a specific mood, and I don't know what that mood is. It's not a happy mood. It would be terrible if it was a sad mood. Like, it might just be a, I'm so bored, let's give it a shot kind of mood, but...
That's what I was going to do for Toy Story 4, but I just couldn't even get through it. Yeah. But at least... People have said Inside Out 2 is a good movie.
Yeah, no, I've heard really good things.
Toy Story 4, people were not saying it was a good movie.
I don't want to be broken like that. Because I have been, like, I've been crying a lot lately. Like, a fucking ton. This December, I mean, since Thanksgiving, I've been just fucking sob city. And I'm, you know, some days you just don't want to. Like, it's the biggest things, it's the smallest things, it's because Alan Rickman is so fucking perfect in Sense of Sensibility, it's because, you know, fucking Coop saying goodbye to his daughter and going off to space. Like, I just, you know, I don't need to cry any more than I already have been. You know, fuck, watching the last Eras tour, it was a blubbering mess. I cried so hard that one of our kids got up and checked on me because he heard his mom sobbing from across the apartment.
Who are the characters Forgetter Paula and Forgetter Bobby?
They are... So you know the little brain people that are like...
The people with the vacuum?
Yes.
Sucking up thoughts memories?
Yeah, they're sucking up the memories. Like, you know, like, piano lessons. She took 4 years, just saved chopsticks and the other one.
Heart and Soul.
Yeah, Heart and Soul. They're the ones that... brought up
I had to hum the first note to remember what it was.
They're the one that kept bringing up that
the commercial.
Yeah, that's them. Okay.
So Paula Poundstone plays Forgetter Paula,
yes.
And Bobby Moynihan plays Forgetter Bobby.
Yes.
Okay. And then Paula Pell, who I recently discovered through that, was it?
Oh,
was,
Girls 5 Eva?
No. Well, yes. She came back in my life because of that. But before that, she was the principal's assistant or something?
Oh, yeah. In AP Bio.
AP Bio. She's hilarious in AP Bio.
I really look forward to rewatching that now that it's on Netflix. She's That's a great fucking show.
Fucking hilarious.
At least the first, like, 2 seasons killed me.
I didn't finish it, so I would like to go back and...
Paula Pell has been a comedy writer forever.
Forever, I mean, yeah.
She started on SNL in 1995. From 1995 to 2023, she wrote on SNL.
Wow, that's the majority of my SNL knowledge because...
Yeah.
I grew up...
those
were my formative years.
She wrote AP Bio. She
no wonder I like
has
her.
Written, you know, for the Golden Globes. She's written for big movies. Like, she's, you know, she helped write 30 Rock. She played Hornberger's wife in 30 Rock. Mrs. Hornberger.
She's close with Tina Fey, right?
Yeah, that's she's very close with them. You know, she's just great. I'm always happy to see her. She's so fucking funny in Girls 5 Eva. She's so fucking funny.
Which is also a Tina Fey thing.
Yes. And it is, honestly, guys, if you haven't watched it, it's like three seasons.
It's so ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous. It's so fucking really funny. The music is hysterical. Girls 5 Eva is wonderful. She is Mrs. Glauberman on Big Mouth.
Okay. Yeah. So, I never knew who Mrs. Glauberman was.
Paul Appel and Richard Kine are Andrew's parents.
That says so much about Andrew.
So much. Yeah. I can't wait to rewatch Big Mouth before the next season.
God. Me too.
There was a really cute little sitcom called Not Dead Yet that she was on that I loved. Paul Appel is just...
Because Big Mouth is actually another show that I have not watched every episode of. I am not current on that show at all.
That show makes me endlessly happy and cry so hard. But yeah, Paula Pell is the best. And I clocked her voice instantly, especially when it was in the... she plays Mom's Sadness. I was like, Paula Pell. She's a delight.
A couple of the actors who play the guard standing in front of the subconscious door.
Yes.
Where the clown is snoozing.
Your favorite part.
But it was the voices of Frank Oz and Dave Goles, who, if people don't know who, or Goels, but Dave Goles, is the voice of Gonzo, has been the voice of Gonzo forever.
Oh, God, and Frank Oz has been the voice. Frank
Oz was the voice of Miss Piggy.
Yeah, forever.
And many other, Fozzie Bear and
many
other voices. He has since he doesn't do.
Well, the man's done everything, for fuck's sake. Done
I need him to direct another movie.
Did you know he was in Blues Brothers?
What?
You do know that, though, right?
He's in Blues Brothers?
Yeah.
Along with.
What's his name? I can't think of his name.
It was Eagles. Joe Walsh.
Joe Walsh. I was going to say Glenn Frey.
Joe Walsh is in Blues Brothers?
Shut up. You love watching that movie with me. Let's see, that's the movie that we need to do.
Yes, I knew Frank Oz was in Blues Brothers.
We need to do a bonus commentary on Blues Brothers so I could just be like, and there's Frank Oz.
We need to just watch every Frank Oz movie where he has a cameo. And you're just like, oh, you know that's Frank Oz.
He's fucking Yoda. He's fucking Yoda.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Flea is also in
one
here.
Of the cops.
John Ratzenberger is also in the movie, of course, because he has to be contractually. Yeah.
Well, up to a point.
You can hear him chime in towards the end of the movie. Plays one of the little blue.
Little brain cells.
Yeah.
Are they brain cells?
Sure.
Yeah. Whatever they are. Yeah.
And Carlos Alazraki, which I can never pronounce his name, but he's the actor from
Reno 911, and he's done a thousand things
and
too.
Writer,
yeah,
producer, actor, actors and character actors that we've known forever, and now they all came together to make this wonderful,
this great film,
touchy feely movie that I feel even more the older I get as a parent, the more I'm feeling this like. This movie, when this movie came out in 2015, my daughter was probably not quite 5 yet.
Oh, God.
And my son was not quite 3 yet.
Oh, God. Wait. Oh, God. Why did I think they were older? They weren't.
They weren't.
Oh, God.
They were babies.
Oh.
And we watched this movie with one idea of what being a parent of a teenager like Riley was going to be like.
Yeah.
And then we watch it again
with an actual
teenagers.
Yeah.
And it.
Oh, God.
And
especially because, like, you know, our son is so sweet and sensitive. He's got big emotions. He's got the biggest emotions. He very much takes after his mother that way. And our eldest is also, you know, quiet and chill, much like their father, and subdued, but, you know, still has big emotions. And when you try to combat your own child's sadness, it's one of the hardest things to do in the world. Trying to combat my children's depression, which I know lives in their head because of me, because I gave it to them. You know, like, it's fucking genetic. You know, seeing their anxiety and their depression and knowing that that was my fault and a little bit yours, but more mostly mine. It's so hard and it hurts so much as a parent because you want them to understand that they're going to be okay. But when you try to tell a 12-year-old that life, you know, doesn't need to be as scary as they're making it for themselves and that it does get easier and it does get better, can be so hard because for them, the world is so small that every emotion is so much bigger. It's so draining to try to keep your children uplifted while you yourself are wallowing in your own self, you know, despair. And I'm endlessly thankful to my therapist for helping me learn the tools that I can pass on to them because, you know, I don't know where I'd be without therapy personally, but I just, like, it's so hard being a parent to emotional kids. And we've got a couple of very emotional little goons. I mean, I remember when our eldest would cry at cartoons, you know, like watching Sheriff Callie and crying because the horse was sad. And then here's my sweet toddler just sobbing in my lap because this cartoon horse is sad. And me being like, I'm sorry, you know, it's okay. The horse is going to have a good ending. It's a kid's cartoon on Disney Junior. It's going to be fine. You know, like.
And then you're like, motherfucker, Disney Junior, you better not fucking fuck better this up Disney Junior.
Like, Jesus fucking Christ. You better not take Moose and Z away from me.
Oh,
you bastards.
They took Moose and Z away
Nick from Junior, us. You motherfuckers. That was the day I left you and I never looked back. It really was.
It really was. Yeah. Yeah. We straight up boycotted.
And once they took Moose and Z from us, we were like, no more. And then we're became a Disney Junior family. Fuck you, Nick Junior. Bring back Moose and Z.
Man.
My beloveds.
If they did, they'd be like really, like.
Oh, they'd be computer animated. They'd be computer
animated and
so awful.
So gross looking.
I know.
But. Hey, we had, our kids were a specific age, and even though that particular programming had been going on for
a long time,
we were able to at least catch some of it.
Enjoy it, some of it.
For a moment.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So weird things that we latch on to.
So a question about, that leads back to Inside Out, since we got off on a pretty wild tangent.
It's all right.
When you were a kid, did you ever make plans of running away?
I think I may have thought about it, like, as in, like, could I?
Yeah.
And then I was like, no, because where would I even go? And I feel like, because I was very comfortable with my situation, I guess. Even on nights where I was in bed, you know, screaming into the pillow that I hated my parents.
Yeah.
I knew that there was nowhere else to go because I had it. Like, when you really step back and look at it.
Yeah.
I had it really.
Yeah, but really as a good. Kid, you don't.
As a kid, and in the moment, yeah, you're just angry and you don't want to look at their faces anymore or hear them talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably had thought about it, but never planned anything. Yeah, it probably just went as far as like, I wonder if I could. No, because where would I go? It was essentially how it went. And then I did, however, sneak out of my house many a time.
And I snuck in a few times, too.
just crawling out my bedroom window.
Did I ever crawl in and out of your bedroom window?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
There was one time I remember sneaking out my bedroom window, pushing my brother and I pushing...
the screen off?
No, we pushed the car out of the driveway because it was a 1964 Ford Fairlane with a very loud V8 in it, and... we had to push it out of the driveway and then push it down the road.
Yeah, you would have had to push that pretty far down the
we
road.
We started it at the stop sign just down the road. Which is, like five houses.
Yeah, it was
four or five houses.
It's a better down part to of that your stop block, sign. Yeah.
Yeah, because, loud. So we'd start it down there and then go off to my friend's house who lived, in the next town and drink and, do whatever, and then back before my parents woke up.
Yeah. I definitely made plans to run away to the point where I had a backpack packed and took the screen off my window in preparation. And then literally, like, I was preparing the night before. And then, like, I, you know, chickened out. And I'm sure it was because my dad was angry at me. And, you know, not only does anger run his emotional console, but it's the only emotion that's in there, I'm pretty sure. So there were a few times where I made, like, legit plans. But ultimately what stopped me was I was afraid of where I would end up. Right? And, like, and it's not like we lived in a big metropolitan city. We lived out in the middle of fuck all nowhere. I had plans about where I was going to spend all day. Like, I was going to go up into the mountains and hide, you know, and just wait for my parents to panic and then come back. And then they'd realize that, you know, I was right all along, or I'm, you know, they love me in the end, or whatever, you know, whatever reason that a tween teenager is planning on running away. But, like, yeah, I packed the backpack and was fully set and then would chicken out last minute. Yeah, I don't think about that often, but it definitely was a part of the old childhood.
So this family of three moves from their
little life in Minnesota.
Yeah, probably lived there for at least over a decade.
Yeah, I mean, she was born
Riley's
there. Yeah.
Like 12?
Yeah.
Or maybe 13,
no,
but
I think she's
probably 12.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that her parents had been there forever.
Sure.
You know? Yeah.
Long enough that Riley has a school, friends, mm-hmm. plays on the hockey team. Hockey is like her
main interest.
Her outlet, her.
Yeah.
Her friends are also on the hockey team. So it makes sense that she was very attached to it, mm-hmm. which I couldn't imagine.
I can.
I know you can. And I grew up in one home.
Yeah, you did.
And when I moved out, I moved out of that same home. It wasn't until you and I got married and we moved from apartment to apartment for a while within mm-hmm. our little desert area where we grew up.
The kids were born.
We are so happy we moved out.
So happy.
But our kids have also been lucky enough to at least...
Up to this point, they've spent a good chunk of their lives in one place.
The friends that they had in elementary school came with them to middle school for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, they know each time they switch schools.
They get new friends.
They get new friends, but they know old friends. But, of course, whether you were a military kid or parents just looking for work.
Yeah.
However, you know, people's lives turn out where they end up moving a lot or being in the middle of any kid, I feel like, that's especially in the middle of a school year.
Yeah.
And is just
luckily,
taken out.
When my parents moved, we always moved during the summer. But
you still form relationships.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I moved between second and third grade. I moved, you know, down country, across country. I don't know how you want to put it. But I, you know, moved several states away. And then after eighth grade, before ninth, I moved up country and then back and then back and then back and then back and then back. And here we are again. But, you know, it is hard on a kid, especially like, you know, I moved from halfway through my freshman year. I moved states again, going back to California. And it was nice because I was going back to friends, but I was still leaving friends that I had made, you know, at my first high school. And it is hard. It's very hard to, you know, move to a new area. It's terrifying. You know, even as adults, like, it wasn't the easiest thing for us to pack up our whole family and move states away from our group of people that loved us and cared for us and took care of us, you know, up to another state where we had basically no one. And the people that we did have wouldn't even drive the 20 minutes to come up and see us because it was too far. But, you know, it's not the easiest thing in the world for a child. It's big change. And I'm glad that we are, at least at the moment, we have no plans on, you know, upending our children's lives and moving them anywhere else, because I think that where they are is the best place for them, which is why you and I will strive to stay here for as long as they need to. But it's very hard. to move as a kid, you know, to make new friends. Not that I've ever had problems with that because I'm amazing, but it's...
Well, I was going to say...
Not easy.
You find new friends so quickly.
Me? It's true.
And, of course, I mean, you're out... Your personality just draws your magnet. And that's just the way your family has always been.
Yeah.
The members of your family are the same way.
For good and for evil.
Yes. Yeah. Not always. Yes. Your powers have been used for good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if some of that had to do with being placed in a new environment and being told, all right, this is where we are for now. You don't know
for how long. No. I mean, so, when we lived in California, we were always threatening to move.
It seemed constantly. Like you're making the best, using up your time wisely.
Yeah.
Like, I got to do this quick.
Yes. I'm very lucky in that I can make friends very quickly with the right and wrong people. You know, one of my best friends on this planet, a woman that I'll love forever and ever and ever, and we will always be friends despite the fact that we barely ever talk because, you know, she lives where she lives and I live where I live and we... rarely ever see each other, but man, we met on the last day of sixth grade, and from then on it was love, and it always has been. Shout out Laurel, I don't know if you listen to this, but I love you so much. You know, and then I've made friends in 5 minutes at fucking in grocery stores that I'll never see again. Like, it's just how I am, and I am very blessed and cursed for that particular outgoing personality. Our kids don't really have that, though. I mean, our son does, because our son takes after me, but our oldest takes after you and is a quiet little introvert. And I couldn't imagine taking them out of high school and moving them anywhere. It would be so detrimental to them. But we also don't have a startup that's going to make money in San Francisco. How do you even move into San Francisco? Like, holy shit, there's no way that selling a house in Minnesota would get you anything. It would get you one night in a hotel in San Francisco.
There must have been some kind of something was offered to him from the new
the company venture or whatever it was, because there's no fucking way.
Now, also, if he lived in San Francisco film. And they decided to go to Minnesota, they'd have a mansion.
Live like kings.
Right.
What would be your specific islands in your head? Or is there one single specific island in your head? Because I 1,000% have an Oscar Isaac Island.
I'm sure
in my brain.
Oscar Isaac Island.
It's like family, friendship, her crush
was just in her imagination, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd have a specific island, a core memory or something that would be constantly drawing you
that
to.
That core memory would be the first time Poe Dameron bites his lip when he sees Finn wearing this jacket. Yeah. That's a core fucking memory for me right there.
Anyway.
Family, friends, work, Oscar Isaac, movies,
well, I hope,
Batman.
Oh God, I hope work wouldn't be an island.
And unfortunately for me, I take work on too much into my own particular. I've been told, and I quote, "We know how emotionally invested you are in your job." And that's when I went, I should stop doing that. Wait a minute. If other people are aware, it's time to stop. Definitely an Oscar Isaac Island. But I feel like Oscar Island has some smaller subset islands that are like Sebastian Stan Island and Monica Bellucci Island and like fucking Seth Meyers Island and like Willem Dafoe Island. Definitely got a small little Willem Dafoe Island.
How about
island
just Handsome Actors Island?
Yeah, but I mean, Oscar Isaac is more than just a handsome actor. Okay, so yeah, there's the Oscar Isaac Island and then there's Celebrity Crush Island. Taylor Swift Island has definitely been growing in my brain since April. You've got a Batman Island, and you know it.
Yeah, well, I was seeing, that's the thing. I was
Red Dead Island.
For a moment, I was thinking I'd have all these different, like, the music island, mm-hmm. the movie island.
Oh, yeah.
But then I was like, well, all of that could just be the pop culture island.
Absolutely have a Batman Island. Like, absolutely. Yeah, there's the pop culture island. Like, I have a Celebrity Crush Island. If I have an Oscar Isaac Island, you've got a Batman Island or a Star Wars Island, which we both share, actually, and somehow are able to connect to each other's islands in our brains when we nerd out on it, which you can hear if you listen to our Star Wars bonus episode that was dropped on May the 4th.
But there would definitely be a family island.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. I mean,
Cat Island. Producer yes. Robin Island.
Feelings for pets.
Yes.
Island, or just tolerance for them.
Yes. Oh, they're so cute when they're asleep.
They are.
And they wake up like and children. You're like, oh God, who's this tiny furry monster I let live in my home?
Just like children.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my general interests are, you know, because of work and family, and I don't have a lot of free time to go do any other activities. You know, I used to ride my bike a lot.
Wish you'd get back
which
into
I that. Would like to get back into, but you know, sometimes other things just take priority day in, day out.
You're kind of an obsessive person in the way that, like, you discover a hobby and you throw yourself so fully into that hobby that you don't do anything else. And then inevitably that hobby dries up and the want to do it goes away. And it's cost me so much money. And now you're on to your next big thing. You know, if you were able to find the time to both ride your bike for your health and for exercise and also podcasts, that would be great. You know, and you can still listen to music while you do it.
The whole hobby thing is I was watching a Instagram reel or something. There were like signs that you have ADHD, and like towards the bottom, it was like ever-changing hobbies.
Oh yeah. I mean, look at me in watercolors, for God's sakes. Like, I took it up hard for about 7 months and then I haven't touched them in over a year. I totally understand that. My writing, it's not even a hobby. It's a passion. It's who I am and what I'm meant to do.
Writing isn't a hobby for you. That is something that's your island.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
you
definitely
have a massive
island.
Mm-hmm. Not even just story horror. Just you like to, one of the ways that you're creative for yourself and ways that you can get emotions, thoughts, whatever you need to get it out of your...
And to disassociate when I'm doing something that I don't want to be doing, and I'm just like, what are my characters doing right now? But yeah, writing's a big thing. I definitely have a writing
massive
island.
Massive.
Yeah. With a bridge that connects to Oscar Isaac.
So Riley is at first trying to make it work. She's working with her parents and being positive. Their van,
well,
they're moving
the
van.
She doesn't want to be positive, but her parents are like, you're our happy
girl. Be
like,
happy, smile.
Yeah, like, oh, we're so grateful.
Make your dad feel better by smiling.
Well, they don't tell her that specifically, but they say, we're so grateful that you're...
There's a moment where the mom went up to her while the dad was on the phone, and she was just like, help your dad out and be happy.
Yeah.
Smile a little more. And it's just like... Ugh.
Yeah,
the pressure
to constantly be happy is really hard.
Right, and you know, it doesn't help that their moving van went to Texas instead of San Francisco. It doesn't help that, you know,
there's broccoli on pizza.
There's broccoli on pizza. I don't know what Minnesota pizza's like, but it's got to be better than broccoli
lots
pizza.
Lots of cheese. Yeah, but you know that Minnesota pizza is going to be a lot more like properly tasty and unhealthy than like
it's going to be
broccoli pizza and fucking
taste
San Fran.
Better than that broccoli pizza.
Yeah, you know that was a gluten-free crust.
Her confidence is going down.
Mm-hmm.
She feels like she's already been replaced on her team back in Minnesota. The hockey team that she's trying out for in San Francisco isn't going well because her confidence is pretty much gone. All these things adding up to just a really depressed kid who has no
outlet. Emotions. And she's missing her two core emotions, which are joy and sadness.
Right.
And we do learn throughout this movie that in order to have one, you kind of have to have the other. I mean, you know, it's not always pure joy. It's not always pure sadness. That they are two emotions, like two of the emotions that work, at least for me, you know, they are intertwined in such a way that they're basically just, you know, saddy, or you know, they're happy sad. And I think that's such a beautiful lesson too, that like some of your happiest memories can come from some of the saddest moments, right? Riley remembering, or you know, one of her core memories being that the time her hockey team rallied around her
even though she lost, or the team lost
because she lost the last shot. But that, you know, out of that sadness came joy. And I think that's also such a beautiful message in
how
this
you're
story.
You don't have to just be one emotion through life.
Emotions are complex,
and they definitely run your life.
Yeah, and you know, you have to have some handle on them. You know, it's funny to think that maybe there are actual small little people up inside your brain choosing your emotions and your thoughts for you. it's hard for people to handle their emotions. And that's why you find a lot of people just bury it down deep. And a lot of dads bury them down deep. And their one emotion is anger. And, you know, you rarely get to see anything else. And we all know those people who try way too hard to be happy no matter what the situation is, right? It's not that they're trying to look for the bright side or the silver lining. They're trying to force happiness when the situation does not call for it. They're the people that are so afraid that they can't function. They're people that are ruled by disgust, by nature, by food, or by other people. Like, you know, all of our emotions control us. And same here. Like, I'm usually happy-go-lucky. And I've had, you know, for the most part, you know, I'd say maybe 85% of the time, I'm happy-go-lucky and everything's great and I'm having the best time. And then when I'm sad, I'll have people be like, well, you can't be sad. You're the happy one. You can't be sad. You can't show your sadness because you have to remain happy for everybody else. And it's like, well, no, that's not fair because I'm a human being and I'm allowed to be sad. But, you know, I've had bosses be like, you're not allowed to be sad. You have to be happy because you're the happy one. And it's like, well, but I'm not. Not all the time. So, you know, it's kind of, it's hard. It's the constant pressure to be happy, you know, the pressure that Riley's parents put on her was interesting. And no wonder she cracked, right? And no wonder Joy cracked, because Joy, too, had to come to terms with the fact that there can be more than one emotion and that there's nothing wrong with sadness. You just can't let sadness rule the day. But in sadness, there is empathy. In sadness, there is compassion. In sadness, there is understanding. And it's always just more than the one thing.
Did you ever have an imaginary friend?
Yes. His name is Calvin, and he was basically Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes.
Nice.
Although, to be fair, I still kind of have imaginary friends because I disassociate so much and live inside of my head with my characters that they're like adult imaginary friends that I'm running around with and talking to. Well, not I'm not running around with and talking to them, but I am in my head writing them or coming up with scenes and you know,
you can write and create stuff. A world where yeah. they...
Where they are doing things and doing I can things. Put myself into that.
Sure.
And by doing so, not being wherever I am. I think disassociating is just adult imaginary friends. What was your imaginary friend like?
I didn't really have an imaginary friend in the way where you talk.
Oh, well, Georgie wants to go to the pizza place.
Yeah, nothing yeah. like that.
Yeah.
However, I had a stuffed animal that my grandmother made. I've talked about it before. It's
Barry.
Barry, the puppet. And I always thought ventriloquism was really cool and neat.
And not super creepy and gross?
No, not when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And so, I was so into it that I convinced my parents to, like, that I wanted to learn how to be a ventriloquist.
Another hobby you were obsessed with.
Because I would talk to Barry, and Barry would talk back, but I wanted to do it in a way where it was actually where it felt.
You wanted to be the next Jeff Dunham without knowing who Jeff Dunham was.
I didn't
was.
Know who Jeff Dunham was.
Lucky you. Back in the time where, the before times where we all lived our lives without knowing who Jeff Dunham was.
If I had actually pursued it, I would have been Jeff Dunham.
Oh, God. And I wouldn't have married you because I would have been like, what a fucking loser.
This guy is so stupid.
Loser.
And so my parents got me a cassette tape. It has like basic techniques on how to pronounce certain syllables or letters or sounds without moving your mouth and doing
how
a lot
of
with...
cassette tape going to help you with that?
It's instructional. A guy who is a ventriloquist talks about how
like
to
you,
do things.
That's a more visual medium. You need to see how they're not opening their mouths to talk.
He tells you how to place your lips and mouth.
Do you remember any of it?
The only thing that's carried on
of
all of that, there was a lot of tricks on how to pronounce a lot of letters, and I forgot all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that used to be one of the things that I could do where I could pronounce like S's and, you know, things where your teeth and tongue and lips need to move to form those sounds. And I knew them. Now I don't. But the only other thing that he did on that cassette tape that I still know how to do is his impression of Donald Duck.
Oh my God, that's where you got it from.
That's where I learned how to do my...
Do it.
Donald, all right. It's... I feel like I used to do it even better when I was younger, but...
That wasn't bad.
It's so stupid, but...
It's so much fun, though, and I love it.
I always...
Because you've done that for as long as I've known you, and I fucking love it.
Because I learned it as a little kid, and that's the only one that stuck was...
And what's amazing, folks, is he... Oh, wow, Donald, settle down. You know Donald drops F-bombs like there's nobody's business. Fuck! Oh, my goodness. Well... And he's doing this all without opening his mouth. It's amazing.
Yes, this is all
this perfect whole ventriloquism. This entire podcast, he hasn't opened his mouth once.
I've never.
You can't see it. I can see it.
I've never once moved my lips during these episodes. But it just doesn't play well for a podcast.
Well, I just had one more thing to say about Inside
Out. Go for it.
Is that I wish that I could see what my dream studio looks like. But unfortunately, my dream studio is like A24 on acid. So it probably isn't something that I'd want to see. Because my dreams are so fucking insane that I have no idea what my dream director is doing in there. He's definitely fucking things up for me.
Yeah, the one place I never want to visit is my subconscious. Dreams are one thing because I don't have the insane dreams you do.
No.
Dreams would be an interesting thing to learn. I love how dreams... were essentially a studio backlot.
Yeah, and the reality filter where they
where they all look like humans. Yeah.
Anyways, ratings.
Maggie, what would you rate Inside Out out of 5 stars?
I would probably give this movie a 4.5. It's sweet. It's lovely. I don't even know why I wouldn't give it a full 5 stars. It's not my favorite Pixar film. You know, it's not like it's WALL-E or Ratatouille that I've got deep connections, like emotional connections with. So I think that's why I'm not giving it a full 5 stars. But yeah, I'd say 4.5. You know, it's great. It's a great film. And I'm glad that it exists. Because if nothing else, I think that it's going to help children and adults for generations to come to understand their own emotions, which is, you know, a beautiful thing unto itself. What about you, Caveman?
I give Inside Out 4 out of 5 stars.
All right. Why just 4?
Like, I really love the story and the main like Riley story and kind of wish there was a little bit more in that world.
That's fair. Although, I mean, that's not the point.
That's not the point of it. I get it.
We didn't even fucking talk about Bing Bong dying.
It's like showing, it's like, let's watch Monsters, Inc., but not show inside Monsters, Inc. We're just going to show you, like, kids sleeping in beds.
Totally
I'm
fine.
I'm comparing it to all the other
Pixar films
that we've been doing coming up.
I don't have the same emotional, like, this. I have a deeply emotional connection to this movie because it makes me ugly fucking cry every time I watch it. Even if it's just a small amount, it's still ugly crying.
Like, I think I like Up more than Inside Out.
No, that's fair.
I think I like... Finding Nemo more than Inside Out.
But see, I've got more personal connections to other Pixar movies. Like how our kid was obsessed with Ratatouille and watched it all the time.
Yeah.
The WALL-E premiere for me. Seeing Up with you before we had children, right? Like each of these movies kind of has an existing story around it. And I don't really have one for this. And that's okay. It's still like, it's a great film, but it's just not as high up there as the rest. And that's all right.
So, Maggie.
Yes, Caveman.
I have 2 questions for you.
Hit it.
Gotta talk to you about something. I gotta talk to you about something. I can't do this alone. I need you in command with me.
But this droid has it. Thank you. I appreciate that. General?
General.
Husbands! Husbands! Play it again.
Gotta talk to you about something. I can't do this alone. I need you in command with me.
But this droid has it. Thank you. I appreciate that. General?
General.
Oh my god, they're so married and I can't stand it. Storm Pilot Forever. It's from The Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you wouldn't get that one. Oh man, you're so good.
My beloved Poe and my beloved Finn, my beloved space husbands. Oh, I just want them to be happy out there. And I really love that Disney was like, these two can't be gay. And John Boyega and Oscar Isaac were like, fuck you. Yes, they can. And they just made these two so in love with each other. And
so, Maggie,
yeah.
With the addition of Oscar Isaac's voice in Inside Out, would it have made it a better film?
I don't think so. No. No, I can't. No. Okay. No. I don't, like, it wouldn't have made it worse. I don't think it would have been necessary.
Second question, which character would you have had Oscar Isaac play?
I mean, he very well could have been the Latin heartthrob boyfriend that the mom fantasized about. you know, like, that's a pretty easy one right there. He could have been any one of the little, you know, brain cells wandering around. But, like, I can't...
Could he have played an emotion at all?
Lust. That's the sound. He's the sound not of your lust emotions. In my head. Well, like, he could have played fear. I don't think he could have played anger because nobody could do that but Lewis Black, right? Fear didn't necessarily have to be Bill Hader, but it would have been fine. You know, and I couldn't imagine him as the dad. I couldn't imagine him as, you know, any of the other male characters. So, yeah, like, if we're going to give him a big part, he could have been fear easily.
All right.
He's got a great voice and he can do fun things with it. And I love him. And I just want to hear that sound clip one more time, please. And thank you.
Gotta talk to you about something.
I gotta talk to you about something.
I can't do this alone.
Your husband.
I need you in command with
me. I need
you with
me.
But this droid has it. Thank you. I appreciate that.
General?
General.
General. General.
General.
General.
Husband. Husband.
General.
General.
Babies! And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle on Inside Out, and we hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed making it for you. Coming up, we've got a lot of really fun things. Next week, our 45th episode is going to be Little Women, which is a film that Caveman and I have both not seen, so it's going to be very interesting to watch that one. I'm quite excited to watch it, actually, and I'm sure it's going to make me cry. Our December bonus episode will be dropping very soon. And it is going to be a take on A Christmas Carol. Which Christmas Carol? A lot of them, actually. It's a lot of Christmas carols that we're watching, and we are going to be rating the best Scrooge, the best music, the best one that's not the Muppets. And yeah, we're really excited. We've been up to our eyeballs in Scrooge lately, and it's been very entertaining and also a little frightening because that story is legit spooky, and I love it. And we're actually going to be dropping that on Christmas Day, because why wouldn't you? It's A Christmas Carol, folks. It's a classic, classic story of the season. Coming up on New Year's Day, we will be dropping our Avengers Endgame episode, which will be a full commentary for the film that you can sync up to your copy of the movie and listen to us talk about it, because there's no other way we're going to be able to talk about that particular movie except just one scene at a time. So it will be a long one. It's going to be ridiculous. You're going to hear me cry so goddamn hard you won't be able to understand me, and it's going to be an absolute delight. So we look forward to getting that done and out there for you as well. As ever, you can find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast. Write to us at moviemingle@gmail.com with any of your questions, thoughts, and concerns. And you can find that email address in the liner notes description, in the description of this episode. I'm tired, guys. And yeah, feel free to leave a rating of 5 stars or whatever you feel we deserve the most on your podcast platform of choice. And if you wanted to get us a Christmas present, just tell your friends about us, guys. Get the word out there about Movie Mingle. It's a fun little podcast. We're having a great time with it. And we're really excited for all the things that are going to come with it in 2025, which is insane. But until then, you know, go grab your friends and all of your emotions and go mingle. Bye.
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach. What's that bar? I'm a little confused.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. 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 Toga.